One, two, three. Welcome, Tucson. That gets us into the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice with me, your host, Zach Yenser. As every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. Thanks for joining us around your maybe 1.5, 2 cups of coffee. We're not judging here. Hope it was a good weekend for you, a little warmer than some expected, but hope you got out and did something and are ready for the week ahead. We sure are here on the program. Got a busy week for you, in fact. Let me tell you what's up today, and then I want to make sure we're in your calendar for the next couple days. One of those weeks where we just have a day after day after day after day of interviews with some people who are definitely representative of people and ideas creating Tucson's future. Today, on the second half of the hour, George Hammond, the Economic and Business Research Center Director from the University of Arizona, will be on the program to give us the latest 2019 Q3 Tucson economy updates. Fresh off the press here. In Tucson, got some economy updates. We'll look at some economic numbers. We'll look at jobs. We'll look at permitting. We'll talk business growth. All the numbers you've been seeing out there, we're going to ask Mr. Hammond some questions and get some clarity from a guy who does this for a living. So 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to give us a call, ask him a question. We have him on for 2 segments, 25 minutes or so. So we'll do our best to get through as much as we can. And we try to make that a consistent thing here on the program, having George Hammond on. And then we'll kick off today like we always do, with a little bit of a weekend in review and some things to look at for the week ahead. Real quick, I want to do this before the show gets away from us. Tomorrow is another big day on the show. We actually are spending the full hour with TUSD Superintendent Dr. Gabe Trujillo. And I rarely do hour-long interviews anymore. They're mostly 2 segments. I'm spending 4 segments with Dr. Trujillo for obvious reasons. TUSD is the largest school district here in Tucson, and it's important to be talking about those issues frequently. Opportunities, issues, challenges. We're going to talk TUSD tomorrow. So let me do this while I'm on the topic and you're listening here. thecreativecityshow@gmail.com is our email address. Why don't you go ahead and send me over the next 24 hours or so any questions, thoughts, concerns, anything that you want me to bring up with Dr. Gabe Trujillo tomorrow. And I will do my best to synthesize that and ask as many questions as I can. Of course, I'll be talking with him about Dustin Williams' selection to the TUSD Governing Board announced on Friday. Former TUSD Governing Board member, in fact, Bruce Burke, will fill the seat vacated by Dr. Mark Stegeman. It's a 1-year appointment, November to November, and Bruce Burke has said that he does not plan to run for election, re-election, or to run to be elected to that appointed seat, rather. So it's a 1-year appointment. He plans to only be in for 1 year, and I want to talk to Dr. Gabe Trujillo about that 2 days after the fact. And then November 6th, that's Wednesday, Fletcher McCusker, Businessman of the Year, Chair of the Rio Nuevo Board, Head of UA Ventures. If there's something moving in Tucson, Fletcher McCusker seems to be behind it. So we'll have him in studio. Okay, enough of all that. Let's go ahead and get into it here. 790-2040 is your opportunity to give us a call and chime in. What's a story coming out of the weekend that you're eyeing, that you're paying attention to? What's something that we should be paying attention to? Give us a ring here on the air, 790-2040. Well, All Souls Procession Weekend in Tucson. We'll do a little bit of culture here to get going. All Souls Procession Weekend wrapped up yesterday. It was a 3-day event here in Tucson. And there are estimates between 100,000 and 150,000 people flocked to downtown to walk the route and end in my neck of the woods, the Mercado San Agustin. They started down, I think, Speedway and Speedway in Grande, I believe, and walked all the way up to the Mercado. It was on the west side following the Santa Cruz this year, and estimates are as high as 150,000 people from all over the region, and maybe even the statewide region, maybe not just our southern Arizona region, but from the southwest have come to it. It has become a very public and wide attended ceremonies in North America over the 30 years that it's been happening. I actually didn't realize this number until Friday. The All Souls procession has been going on for 30 years. It began in Tucson in 1990 with a ceremonial performance piece created by a local artist by the name of Susan Johnson. Susan Johnson was grieving the passing of her father, and she found some peace and comfort in a celebratory approach to memorializing him. Says Johnson, from the beginning, it was different people's ethnic groups, different cultures, but also it was all these different art forms together. So after that first year in 1990, many artists were inspired to join Susan Johnson, and the procession grew and grew and grew. And according to their website, they find themselves organizing well over 150,000 participants on the streets of downtown Tucson for a 2-mile-long human-powered procession that ends in the ceremonial burning of a large urn filled with the hopes, the offerings, and the wishes of the public for those who have passed. And if I'm recalling, this actually used to wind through downtown Tucson along Congress or Broadway. And then I think some of the businesses downtown just maybe got tired of supporting the event or didn't want to continue. And so it moved more towards the west side of the 10. Now, of course, Susan Johnson did not come up. She was the originator of what has been known as All Souls Procession Weekend, but it comes on the same date and the same timeline as the Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos, a Mexican celebration of family. It happens, I believe it was November 1st and 2nd. So same timeline. Of course, All Souls Procession is kind of a version of this, but it is has been practiced for many, many, many years. In fact, Day of the Dead originated several thousand years ago with the Aztec, Toltec, and other Nahua people who considered mourning the dead disrespectful. For these pre-Hispanic cultures, death was a natural phase in life's long continuum. The dead were still members of the community, kept alive in memory and spirit. And during Dia de los Muertos, they temporarily returned to Earth. Today's Dia de los Muertos celebration is a mashup of pre-Hispanic religious rites and Christian feasts. It takes place on November 1st and 2nd, All Saints Day and All Souls Day, on the Catholic calendar, in fact, around the time of the fall maize harvest. And the centerpieces, as National Geographic reports, the centerpiece of the celebration is an altar or an ofrenda built in private homes and cemeteries. They're not for worshiping. They're meant to welcome spirits back to the realm of the living. As such, they're loaded with offerings, water to quench thirst, food, family photos, and a candle for each dead relative. And there's a celebration for young children, and there's a celebration for older adults. And if you've seen the movie Coco, we actually had the author of the children's book from the movie in studio about a year and a half ago. She's local here. If you've watched Coco, it's somewhat of a replaying of some of the cultural rituals and how this has played out in Mexico. But a thousands of years tradition in Tucson. Again, Susan Johnson developed an All Souls procession weekend. It's now in its 30th year. Yesterday, this past weekend was year 30. Brought in maybe around 150,000 people, and many say in Tucson that this is something that should become a more national and even global thing that we talk about and say, hey, we do this. So that's up to debate, depends on who you ask. Established 1990. So that's our cultural highlight here on Talking Tucson. The news, the stories, the items, the themes, important as we come out of the weekend, enter the week. When we come back, Tucson, all mail-in ballots are due. If you missed mailing it, we'll tell you where to go. We'll also talk about the seven big bets that will decide who wins the White House in 2020. I didn't come up with these, but I thought they were interesting. I thought you would too. We'll talk about it when we come back before George Hammond joins us for a Q3 Tucson economic update. So much more to go here on the show on 1030 The Voice. Come on back. Tucson, welcome back into the show. This is your host, Zach Yen. So you're listening to the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice, indeed trusted local news and talk. We're getting started into the week, as we often do, talking Tucson, the news, the trends, the items, the issues coming out of the weekend that are important as we start the week. I shared a little bit about the All Souls procession that wrapped up yesterday. It's a three-day weekend event. That brought about 150,000 people to downtown Tucson. Talked to some All Souls. Talked a little bit of Dia de los Muertos, that celebrated in Mexico. It's the Day of the Dead. As always, if you miss anything as we go from segment to segment, you can listen to our podcast. In fact, I encourage you to do so by going to kvoi.com/podcasts, or if you are an Apple or a Android smartphone user, you can go on the apps, the podcast app or the Google Play Music app, find our show and download it and listen to it while you're cleaning, working, driving. If you can't always catch the full hour here live, there are options, and we'd love for you to listen to us over there. Well, just a public service reminder that if you live in the Tucson city limits and you are a registered voter, tomorrow, November 5th, is Election Day. And if you haven't had a chance to mail in your Tucson ballot, it was a all-mail-in election. In other words, you can't just go to a polling place that you might find in a, you know, in a state or national election or a county election. You can't go and grab a ballot and do it there. You have a ballot. It was mailed to you. If you didn't mail it in by October the 30th and you still have it, there are 7 locations tomorrow where you can go and drop it off. A few years ago, the city of Tucson made a decision to do local elections mail in, hoping that it would make it easier for folks who may not have the flexibility to break away during the day. They have, three weeks, a month? I'm forgetting when I got my ballot, but enough time to look it over in peace and quiet, fill it out, mail it in. If you didn't get a chance to do that, there are 7 locations. Those are the Department of Housing and Community Development on Commerce Park Loop, the Morris K. Udall Regional Center, the Donna R. Liggins Recreation Center, that's 6th Avenue, Morris K. Udall's on Tenca Verde, the William Clemente Clemens Recreation Center, Poinciana Drive, El Pueblo Senior Center on Irvington, Parks and Recreation Administration, Randolph Park, and the Tucson City Clerk on 12th Street. So the idea is you've got some west, east, north, and south options there. And you can just go ahead and search vote by mail 2019 voting elections. You can go ahead and drop off your ballots by 7 p.m. tomorrow to make sure that your ballot is counted. And I believe this is an important election, as all elections are, and your vote does count. And so if you didn't get a chance to get your ballot in the mail by October the 30th, you still have an opportunity to take it to one of those 7 locations tomorrow between 6 a.m. and 7 p.m. By the way, if you drop it off at the Tucson City Clerk's office, the timing is a little bit different, but actually, no, tomorrow it's all 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. So scratch that. All 7 locations, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. All right. As we've been doing this last few months, I like to drop in a little bit of national news as we talk Tucson to kick our Monday off. In about 8 minutes, George Hammond from the University of Arizona will join me to make sense of some of the new Tucson Q3 economy numbers. But before we get there, Politico wrote an article called The 7 Big Bets That Will Decide Who Wins the White House in 2020. Let me summarize these, and of course, you're welcome to join in. 790-2040 is your live line to add in your thoughts. I hope you go ahead and do that. So the seven big bets that will decide who wins the White House in 2020. What do you think of these, fact or fiction? Here's the first one. The big bet, the campaign in 2019 was mostly BS, as they wrote it. And basically, this big bet is that we're hearing a lot of Twitter noise, cable noise, political stories. They kind of make fun of themselves, Twitter stories. But in the end, the country is not interested in all these big ideas that are being voiced by the many Democratic candidates. They want a moderate, right? The campaign in 2019 was mostly BS. People are mostly interested in a moderate Democrat. All these big ideas, we're not quite there yet. What do you think? Fact or fiction, Tucson? Do you take that bet? That's one of seven big bets that will decide who wins the White House in 2020. Here's the other one. The DNC, Democratic National Committee, knows what it's doing, that the way it set up the debates and how people have to raise money and how many people get to be on stage, that they may actually know what they're doing. On the one hand, this approach has created incentives for candidates to move leftward. But on the other hand, people like Andrew Yang, who would have had no shot in most any other year, was able to poll and raise enough small contributions to make it on the stage. And that was the point of this big bet, that because the DNC prioritized small contributions, it pushed the party to the left, but it also elevated voices who may not have had a chance. So the big bet, the DNC knows what it's doing. Fact or fiction, do you take that bet? Number three, Iowa is feeling young at heart. As Iowa looks at three, septuagenarians, I think I messed that up, candidates over 70. There we go. You look at Bernie, you look at Elizabeth, you look at Joe. They're in their 70s. Those are the top three. Not necessarily in that order, but those are the top three polling right now. When it comes to Iowa, are they going to look younger? Are they going to want a Kamala Harris in her 50s or a Pete Buttigieg in his 30s? The big bet, Iowa is feeling young at heart. What do you think, Tucson? You take that bet, fact or fiction? Number four, Bob Dylan is right again. You better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing. This is one of the most strategic divides of the Democratic race, is expanded positions on health care, decriminalizing illegal border crossings, providing reparations to descendants of slaves, and so on. Bets that the ideological pendulum of American politics has swung left in decisive ways. Is that happening? Is that true? Are the times changing that much, that fast? Huge big bet on where the Democratic presidential nomination will go. What do you think, Tucson? 790-2040. Number five, the big bet. Elizabeth Warren has a plan to not be flattened by her plan. she has an uncanny, we'll call it a skill. In politics, it's probably a skill, right? The ability to have a plan until she doesn't want one. And then she can get really murky really fast. Is that going to matter to voters? It's a big bet. Many consider her the front runner. She's definitely closer than ever. She's pulled within a few percentage points of Joe Biden. And I don't know about you. This is not, I've not liked Joe Biden. This is not a, this is, doesn't come from a biased perspective, but I watched that guy and man, after about 60 to 90 seconds, he really starts to struggle. If you watch him during the debates, he's good for about a minute, minute and a half. And then the longer he goes on, it's just the more muddled things get. I just don't see him going all the way. So I think that's an interesting bet to make about Elizabeth Warren. Number six, the 2020 primary electorate really will be different. Sanders' big bet is that the movement has a capacity to grow and to appeal to voters who have not previously participated in Democratic contests. One candidate, Bernie Sanders, could survive middling performances in the early states as he attracts roughly 15% support in the polls, and this support looks durable. His most ardent backers regard him as different, not just a politician, but the leader of a movement. Lots of candidates historically have pledged to expand the electorate and not many have been successful. On the other hand, there was evidence in 2018 that some of these groups actually did see a real big boost in turnout. Latinos, their voter turnout increased more than any other ethnic group, and the younger generations outvoted the boomers and older generations. So number six, big bet, the 2020 primary electorate really will be different. What do you think, Tucson, fact or fiction? Number seven. Oh, this one's interesting. The big bet, no one cares what we think. And by we, the authors writing for Politico say it's the media in general, the larger community of news organizations, professional operatives, and analysts who tend to be our sources. The embedded assumptions that tend to inform our work are just plain wrong, and no one cares what we think. Big bet number seven. What do you think, Tucson? 790-2040. I'll take that big bet number seven for 2000. I'm just kidding. I've had, as I listen to operatives and analysts and I look at the media, I am more certain than ever. And I didn't really buy this even in 2016. But now as I've been watching, I just think that there's something happening in America that most of the kind of typical operatives and analysts don't fully have a grasp on. There's something numerical that doesn't match what's happening beneath the numbers. So I'll take that big bet. By the way, that article was the seven big bets that will decide who wins the White House in 2020. If you want to go and take a look, what bets will you take? When we come back from our bottom of the hour news break, George Hammond will be in studio to talk Q3 Tucson economy and numbers. We'll make sense of that right after the break. That's how we'll end the hour. So don't go away, Tucson. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back. Happy Monday to you. Hope it's getting started well for you. We're hitting the ground running here on the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser. We spent our first half of the hour talking Tucson, as we often do. The news, the stories, the items, the trends coming out of the weekend that will create and shape the week ahead. But we now move to our guest interview today. And like I said, we're hitting the ground running. With me in studio is George Hammond, the Economic and Business Research Center Director out of the University of Arizona, with our latest 2019 Q3 Tucson Economy Update. Thank you for starting your Monday with us here, sir.
Oh, thanks so much. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, no, always fun. George sent me some stuff. I sent him some stuff. We're gonna talk about it. All the latest map dashboard numbers came out for 2017, 2018. We'll get to those in a minute and why they are delayed. I think this is an important part of our conversation. There are projections. There's what actually ends up happening, and then there's the tail of it to track. But you sent me some basic updates, some basic numbers for how our economy is doing here after the third quarter of 2019. What are the highlights, George Hammond?
Yeah, according to the latest monthly employment data coming out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity, Tucson has really picked up some steam in the third quarter of the year, growing much faster than the national average, generating a lot more jobs than we were during the first two quarters of the year. So this preliminary data...
Right. Emphasis on preliminary.
On preliminary, right, showed an additional 9,000 jobs in Tucson over the year.
Okay.
That's 2.5% growth, which is a lot faster than the nation at 1.5%, mm-hmm. and much faster than we were growing in the first two quarters of the year.
Amazing.
The thing you got to watch out for is that monthly data gets revised each year. The next revision will be in March of 2020. And during the past couple of years, Tucson has shown strong growth in the preliminary data, and then it's been revised down once we got the final numbers out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So it's a good sign that the preliminary data is showing relatively strong growth, but we'll wait until March before we know for sure what BLS actually think happened.
So when I was looking at those preliminary numbers on just the jobs side, you also have some numbers for us today, George Hammond, about permitting and some sales tax growth as well, or sales tax update numbers. But when you look at Q1 being 1.5, Q2 is 1.8. What are some of the probable reasons that we saw a big enough jump from there in Q3 to move us to that 2.5% for the year?
Yeah, it's something that it happens. You know, I can't point to any particular factor that I know that drove that. I can't tell you what industries generated the strongest growth in the third quarter. That was education and health services. So those healthcare jobs drove a big chunk of the job growth. Leisure and hospitality, the tourism sector, also generated strong gains, as did government, both federal government. Part of the federal government increase was census workers that are starting to be hired, right? We also saw some state and local government jobs come online. And the thing that's really stood out, Tucson and across Arizona lately, is manufacturing job growth, right? Those are high-paying jobs. We're seeing in Tucson, those are coming in aerospace and defense. Raytheon, for example, other aerospace and defense manufacturers. Increasing employment,
right.
High-wage jobs, high-skill jobs, and those are really important, and it's really nice to see those growing. Where we're seeing job losses is in trade, transportation, and utilities. And what's down is retail, right? So what we're seeing there is this battle between brick-and-mortar retail and online retailers.
Wow.
And we're seeing a lot of restructuring, particularly in general merchandise and clothing retailers. Where we're seeing growth is on the other end of that spectrum, right? It's transportation and warehousing. So Amazon warehouse jobs, those are in transportation and warehousing, and other firms. They're basically distributing the goods that we're all ordering online. We're seeing growth there across the state, and particularly here in Tucson. So it's a really interesting jobs report so far this year.
It is. So it's hard to point to any one thing. I mean, we've seen in Q3 at some Hexagon expansion, for example. I had some people say, well, did Caterpillar start moving employees in? Was that Raytheon's job expansion? It kind of could be all the above. There's nothing that really that you can point to and say, we did this input, and so we created this output.
Right. That there are typically long lags between when we see an announcement that something is going to happen and then when it actually happens. And, you know, every firm that's moving operations or expanding operations in Tucson, there are things that might change the timing from what was originally announced. So it can be a little hard to connect the dots there, but we are seeing nice, strong job growth here in Tucson in the third quarter, again, according to that preliminary data.
Right. Yeah. And is the 1.5% national rate, is that decent? I mean, is that a good number, or is the national rate of growth low?
Well, I could put that in perspective with respect to what we saw last year nationally, which was 1.7% job growth. So pretty similar to what we've seen with respect to the national data. That gets revised as well in March of next year. And for the national data, we get a little bit of a peek into where that revision is going to go. And BLS has announced that they expect that preliminary monthly job growth data to be revised down slightly going into the year. So it looks like the national economy is decelerating in terms of its job growth.
Okay.
And the deceleration may be a little bit more significant than what we're seeing in the preliminary data.
Gotcha. You have a couple of other metrics to look at, and then we'll change gears a little bit to the new MAP dashboard numbers that you do a lot of work on as well with George Hammond here in studio on this Monday, November the 4th. He's the Economic and Business Research Center director and a research professor at the University of Arizona with a Q3 Tucson economic update. You have some interesting numbers around single-family housing and multifamily housing development with permits up or down. Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, one of the sectors that's also generating some pretty nice job growth is construction. And construction jobs have really rebounded over the last year or so. And part of what's driving that is a big increase in housing permits that we saw in 2017. They bounced up to about 4,500 permits, which is way above what we saw in 2016. 2018 was in that same ballpark, and we're seeing kind of the same level of housing permit activity. So even though it's down a little bit over what we saw in 2018, at least so far this year. It's running at a strong rate, about 4,000 permits per year. So the residential construction sector is adding jobs. We're seeing house prices rise at a fairly rapid pace here in Tucson. That is affecting housing affordability. But, you know, the other side of that is if you're looking to sell your house, you're probably going to get a pretty good price for it.
Sure. We're also, I think, seeing in Tucson that a lot of people aren't wanting to sell, which is also creating a little bit of that bubble where, on average, I'm going to talk about this tomorrow, and I geek out about this, so I apologize, George Hammond. I shouldn't be talking. We have George Hammond in studio. What am I doing talking? But on average, across the country, people are staying in their homes 5 years longer than they used to. And so we're seeing more people needing and wanting to get into housing. We're seeing people starting to age in place. I think in Tucson, certainly aging in place, which is a good thing. We're just seeing less turnover in the market. So there has to be, I think, some adjustments in supply, I would imagine, or we're going to keep seeing that dollar amount continue to rise, I would assume.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that we're hearing from builders around the state and really around the nation is that they're facing rising costs,
right?
Labor costs. It's hard to find construction workers these days. Labor markets are a lot tighter than they used to be. And even materials prices, you know, have scaled up over the past couple of years. You know, some of them have come back down, but that will continue to be part of the picture.
We've got about a minute and a half. I think we can do this before we switch over to the MAP dashboard. I hear George Hammond. Taxable sales growth in Tucson continued to run at a strong pace through August. What are we seeing with taxable sales growth?
Yeah, we're seeing taxable sales for retail. So, you know, cars, clothing, all those things that we buy, has been rising at a strong pace, much stronger than it had over the past couple of years. Also seeing restaurant and bar taxable sales rising rapidly. And that suggests that the income growth in 2018 and into 2019 has been pretty solid. And that income data has a relatively long lag. The last data we have is for 2017. So we kind of look to that sales tax data to give us a read on what might be happening with income. And the picture looks pretty strong.
Interesting. Now, if you're the city of Tucson or you're living in the city of Tucson, I mean, that's how the city makes its money, right? Is hopefully seeing growth, taxable sales growth. Those are dollars that go into our general fund and our discretionary funding at the city to pay for stuff and do more things, right? Is that the Cliff Notes version?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, the revenue picture is looking a little brighter lately than it has been over the past couple of years.
Super. Well, we are just halfway done with our time here in studio with George Hammond from the University of Arizona. When we come back, I want to tie this into the latest economic numbers on the MAP-AZ dashboard, the Tucson Metropolitan Statistical Area, MSA, economy scorecard, to me seemed kind of to downgrade a little bit from where it was maybe from the last data picture. And so I wanted to compare Q3 numbers, 2019 numbers, with what we saw from numbers that we can actually know are strong and firm from 2017, 2018, trying to make sense of where Tucson is, where it needs to go, kind of what's on the horizon. And I think we can do that in 12 or 13 minutes. We're going to certainly try. Join us, Tucson, back after a short break here on 1030 The Voice with more about Tucson's local economy. Don't go away. Tucson, welcome on back in. You're listening to the Creative City Show. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, joined in studio by George Hammond, the Economic and Business Research Center Director at the University of Arizona and a research professor. When I look at numbers about the economy and where Tucson's economy is going, here on the show, we like to have George Hammond in to give us the real deal and to bust myths and to tell us what's really going on, because economics can be a little bit confusing sometimes. He has a Q3 latest update from 2019. These are projections. These are initial numbers that may change up or down, often down traditionally in Tucson as we get real numbers for the year ahead, but the projections look pretty good. If you missed that piece of our interview, check out the podcast, because we don't have time to get back into it, but you can hear the whole rundown from the third segment of our hour here by listening to our podcast. I want to shift gears a little bit, but I still think it relates. I want to look at the MSA, the Metropolitan kind of economy numbers, the scorecard, the most recent one on the MAP AZ dashboard, a project that you're very integral to. Some of the numbers kind of went down in my mind. One of the ones I've been seeing around and some discouragement around is our business growth metric. We had 0% business growth in the Tucson MSA from 2017 to 2018. That was a downgrade that put us in the, actually ranked us last in our region. What's going on there?
Yeah, it's a little bit surprising, but you want to keep in mind that that measure tracks establishments with employees, right?
Okay.
So it's a particular kind of establishment. And there are, you know, a lot of other kinds of establishments, including those with no employees. So think of someone who's self-employed, doesn't employ anybody.
Okay.
We may be seeing growth there. The other thing to keep in mind is that sometimes we see that kind of trend in the business growth data when the size of the establishments is increasing, right? So we may be seeing relatively little growth in establishments, but they're employing more people. So the number of employees per establishment may well be rising. So we're seeing job growth. Establishments aren't growing. So that suggests that the number of employees per establishment is rising a bit. So you're right that we do look to that business growth metric to show us something about the dynamism of the local economy. How many people are taking the time and the trouble to open an establishment, hire some workers, and go into business? And, you know, Tucson has really struggled to generate growth there, particularly since the recovery began.
Yeah.
And it's just part of that recovery process. I think it'll pick up. I don't think we're gonna catch up to some of the really dynamic metros like Denver and Austin, but I think Tucson will bounce back as we go forward.
So just to be clear, that business growth is not necessarily growth of an existing established business. It's a growth of new businesses.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So those are the number of establishments. So we're just counting those establishments. So when we get a new establishment pop up and they hire some employees and they're covered by unemployment insurance, then they show up in this metric. And you know what we tend to see is that most of the sectors that account for that growth tend to be in service providing sectors like professional and business services. Retail, you know, kind of smaller businesses will be there. The bigger firms and the more capital intensive industries where you got to buy a lot of equipment,
yeah.
There's a big entry barrier there to getting started, like in manufacturing and mining. We tend to see a lot less establishment growth there.
Interesting. So if in, and again, these numbers are from 2017 to 2018, because those are real numbers we can work with, not projections, not the mid tail, but these are the long tail of those numbers. The question that comes to mind is, if we're seeing job growth, but not business growth, is that okay? Like, is it okay to have job growth in existing businesses, but no business growth? Is that long-term okay?
Sure. There is nothing wrong with that, right? We can have the size of the firms gradually rise. And it's not that we're transitioning to an economy where where most of the growth is in these giant firms. These can, you know, there are a lot of one or two person firms. So it may just be that, you know, one person establishments or one employee establishments are going up to two or three, right? That can be part of the picture as well. And, you know, it is the small businesses, the new startups that do generate a lot of the job growth that we see. So particularly in the short run, I don't think it's something that we should be particularly concerned about, but it's something we'll be tracking on the dashboard and digging into as the trend develops.
For sure. For sure. Our employment growth, now we can transition to that from 2017 to 2018, was 1.2%. We saw projected Q1 and Q2 of this year kind of be around the same overall. You know, our 2019 job growth is about double of that. But in that data set that we can look at for sure, we were in the bottom third, and that was actually a downgrade for Tucson. So it seems like we're going in the wrong direction as we get a little further from the recession. What may be behind those numbers that's hard to see when you're looking at this scorecard?
Right. The thing that jumps out for me when I look at Tucson's employment growth since the recovery began is that, you know, we started out at about the national rate of growth in 2011, 2012. We got into 2013, kind of the bottom fell out. We went down to almost zero job growth. We're growing at way less than 1%. And what drove that was the imposition of the sequester and other budget cuts in 2013, right? And that really took the wind out of Tucson's sails because Tucson is much more dependent on federal government activity, right? Federal government activity is not just those jobs you typically think of as federal government activity, like the Border Patrol and the FBI, other criminal justice stuff. It's also federal procurement spending, right? Raytheon is an example of that. Federal spending affects what happens at Raytheon and other small defense and aerospace firms. So when that procurement spending, that federal spending went down, it really affected Tucson. Now that spending has picked back up and we've seen job growth pick up as well, but we're still not quite meeting the national average. We're close, but we're definitely in the ballpark. So, you know, Tucson at about 1.5% to 1.5% is kind of the growth that that we're probably going to be seeing until things really turn around.
So that was a perfect segue to something I wanted to ask you. So I'll just ask you now before we run out of time on accident. It's the question I've asked a lot of the candidates that have come through and a lot of people in the know, and it's hard to get a straightforward answer, but you've given one to me before, and I'd love for our listeners to hear it. How does the economy grow, right? Like, if Tucson wants to get from that 1.2, 1.5, wants to get to that 2% employment growth, wants to see more than 0.0% business growth, what are the factors that we need to be working on in Tucson to make the economy grow?
Right. Economists tend to focus on the long run when thinking about that issue. And what drives long-run growth in states and local areas is kind of three main factors. One is educational attainment or human capital, right? We need to continue to invest and invest more in human capital. We need more highly educated, more people with a bachelor's degree or better level of educational attainment. We need more people with associate's degrees and certificates that can drive our economy forward. They need to be ready for the kinds of jobs that we're going to be generating over the next couple of decades.
So workforce development.
Right, yep. Absolutely is key. The second major issue that's important is infrastructure. So highways and roads, water and sewer, port infrastructure, and airports matter as well. Telecommunications, internet access is going to matter going forward. And the third major thing is we need to make sure that our tax and regulatory system is competitive with those areas of the country for which we compete with business.
As an economist who looks at the numbers, looks at the data, right? And I phrase it that way because, my question and your answer to this next one, it doesn't have the same charge to it as if you were running for office. If there was one of those three things that you look at and go, Tucson's got the most gaps in that area, right? If you had to pick one of those things for us to work on, what's the area that you feel we're lacking the most in?
I think we've got work to do on infrastructure for sure, but I think the fundamental area that we should be investing more in is education and educational attainment, particularly education for the early childhood age group in the poorest neighborhoods. We know that that's where we get the biggest bang for our buck in terms of educational investment, and we need to find a way to make that happen.
George Hammond, Economic and Business Research Center Director at the University of Arizona, thank you for spending your Monday with us here right off the bat in the 9 o'clock hour, and we'll do this again soon. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thanks, Zach.
Yes. If you missed any of that interview, go to our podcast. I'll pitch that one more time, kvoi.com/podcast, or on your podcast app if you use an Apple device, or on Google Play Music, three places where you can catch up on anything that you miss, and I hope you do that. Well, that's it for our Monday show here on the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser on the air with Doug, Jen, and Victoria coming up. And then Bill Buckmaster, as always, at noon with his political face-off and more, the Monday kickoff show. Don't forget, tomorrow, Tuesday, Dr. Gabe Trujillo, speaking of K through 12 and speaking of workforce development, will be in for the whole hour tomorrow, a rare one-hour interview where we just talk one thing, TUSD education with Dr. Gabe Trujillo. That's our Tuesday show, November 5th. So much more today and so much tomorrow and through the whole week here on this program and others on 1030 The Voice. TheCreativeCityShow at gmail.com is where you can send me questions for Dr. Gabe Trujillo, and I hope you do. We'll see you tomorrow, Tucson, at 9. Take care. Have a great day.